It's Wednesday, December 9th, and this is VOA's International Edition. Hello, I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Coming up, reaction is very strong to a U.S. presidential candidate's suggestion. The California community tries to heal in the wake of last week's shooting attack.
The path that it has embarked on since its somewhat controversial decision of November 2014, to my mind, doesn't really have any U-turns.
Very low oil prices are affecting the global economy. Also ahead, new music goes to the childhood roots of a guitarist with a very long beard. It's all coming up on today's International Edition. Playing on the fears of many Americans in the wake of last week's deadly terror attacks in San Bernardino, California, U.S. presidential candidate Republican Donald Trump has called for a total ban and complete shutdown of Muslims entering the United States. Trump's comments have ignited a huge political controversy within the country. And joining me for more in the studio is VOA senior political correspondent Jim Malone. Jim, his massive supporters continue to cheer amid widespread condemnation from his critics.
And not only that, Jim, around the world, I mean, I've seen reactions coming in now from Bangladesh, from Indonesia. People are now focused on the American election campaign and the personage of Donald Trump specifically, and this has become a lightning rod issue right now. He's really created a political firestorm. It's being condemned not only by his Republican presidential rivals, but also certainly Hillary Clinton and a number of the Democrats have spoken out against this. The White House spokesman, Josh Earnest, basically said today that it was disqualifying for Trump to even seek the presidency to advocate such a proposal as he's put forward.
Pretty strong words coming out of the White House. You usually don't hear that in response to a political challenger, especially when it's somebody who's not directly challenging the person in office.
No, and it also came up at the State Department briefing during the day. So it's obviously going to get huge play internationally. This is going to be the signature world story right now for the American election campaign. And the White House and some of the Democrats are challenging the Republican Party now to sort of back up their admonitions against Trump, to sort of stand against him if they will. And I must say, there does appear to be a developing dilemma here for the Republican Party, because the latest Marist poll I just saw has Hillary Clinton defeating Trump by double digits if they were both nominees of their party. So they've got to start to look at the tea leaves and realize that the more controversial he is, the more they may be digging themselves in a hole for the general election that may be very devastating for the party.
Well, you certainly don't have to go very far, at least in today's news, to find a critic of Donald Trump. And yet, his supporters are feverishly backing him. And his numbers, at least among his core group, are pretty impressive as we look to Iowa, which is one of the first states where he's going to be tested.
Yeah, both nationally and in some of the key early states, Trump continues to do well in the polls. Obviously, now everyone will be watching these the polls to see what comments they may have on the impact of his election fortunes. A lot of people are speculating, is this the moment now where Trump starts to implode? The problem is, we thought we've been at that point several times before when he described Mexican immigrants as racist and other examples you can cite. So we're just going to have to wait and see what kind of impact this has on the entire Republican Party. But listen, I mean, he's in the top one or two in the Iowa polling right now. That'll start February 1st. He leads in the New Hampshire primary, the next big contest, by a wide margin. So if Trump is able to either win, play second in Iowa, and then win in New Hampshire, he could be in the driver's seat for the party nomination.
I've heard some talk that, at least among Republican voters, Trump really only needs to have about a third, and that's about where he sits right now.
He does, and a lot of people have said it doesn't look like he can push his numbers beyond that maybe he's hit a ceiling. That may be true. The other issue for the Republican Party, you know, who is the alternative right now to Donald Trump? And we know there are many, and it still seems as though this won't really start to sort out until the voting begins. Whether these latest comments will change the direction of the race, too early to know, but certainly it's a very kind of fragile and uncertain time in our politics. And you have someone like Donald Trump who's trying to take advantage of that with his core supporters.
Well, amid these fragile times, we always can rely on strong observations and comments from our own Jim Malone. Thank you so much for dropping by, Jim.
Thank you. Anytime.
Well, it's time now to check out what's buzzing online. I can't imagine what the topic might be, but International Edition's social media guru G. Abby Lee is here in Studio 22 to tell us what people are saying about the billionaire presidential contender Donald Trump. Hello, G.
Hello, Jim. Many people talk about Trump all the time, to my dismay, actually. But it's worth noting this time around because the latest remark is from a high-level White House official. Josh Earnest, who is the White House press secretary, slammed Trump Tuesday because the presidential hopeful proposed banning Muslim immigrants, like we just heard. Earnest was speaking during a regular briefing and said the comment should disqualify him from serving as president. You can find Earnest on Twitter at PressSec, but the clip is not available on his Twitter page. For that, we have to turn to Facebook.
Well, I'm sure you found some interesting things there. Tell us about the details of what he said.
Absolutely. So many news outlets shared a clip of the briefing, but for our segment, let's take a look at the ABC News Facebook post. The caption basically states what Earnest said and that he urged other GOP contenders to say they would not support him as the party's nominee.
And what's the reaction like?
Let's check out the replies to the post. The reply with the biggest number of likes reads like this. It's by a woman named Christy, and the only reason the Congress or the government doesn't like Trump is because he can't be bought and he can pay his own way through it all. That means the campaign, and another person replied with this comment. Being Muslim and not being born in the USA disqualifies Obama as being president. I'd like to point out that that statement is not true, and President Obama was actually born in the state of Hawaii, which, the last time I checked, is part of the USA. So it appears many Trump supporters are happy with his proposal.
So tell us about the proposal. Where can we read more about it?
Trump actually sent out a link to his statement on Twitter. He tweeted, "Just put out a very important policy statement on the extraordinary influx of hatred and danger coming into our country. We must be vigilant." And when you click on that link, you'll find a statement in which he is calling for a complete and total shutdown of Muslims entering the United States. He's on Twitter at RealDonaldTrump. Jim?
Well, thank you, as always, for your analysis, G. And the International Edition team would love to hear from our listeners as well. You can tweet us all your feedback. Our handle at VOA underscore IE or to G's account at G Abby Lee. This is VOA.
One of the world's great cities, the gateway to America for generations. VOA brings you New York in 12 rarely seen views. Presenting the 2016 VOA calendar, a gift from us, free for the asking. Just send us your mailing address in an email to calendar at voanews.com, and you can have New York's beauty grace your wall all next year.
Do you lead a busy life? Not always able to catch your favorite VOA radio or TV program? If you are keen to stay in touch with world news and events, give VOA podcasts a try.
VOANews.com.
Visit our website at VOANews.com to learn how you can become a subscriber to VOA podcasts and keep your life up to date.
VOA News, your trusted source for news and information.
This is VOA's International Edition. Government employees at the California facility where 14 people were gunned down in what President Barack Obama called a terrorist attack returned to work on Monday. And while some in the area are trying to return to normal routines, the impending funerals and memorial services for the victims is a reminder that life is different in the wake of the attack. VOA's Kane Faribault joins us from San Bernardino. Kane, how are people dealing with this a week after the attack?
This is now 6 days after the events that transpired, in which the shooting left 14 people dead and another 21 people injured. And so this is a community that is still mourning. And I've visited several times now the makeshift memorial that's been placed just a little ways away from the Inland Regional Center, which is the scene of the shooting. And it's a place where people are coming to pray, to share in the grief that they have, the grief that this community is experiencing. And so it's an opportunity and a location for people to publicly express their support for the victims and the survivors, and also just to generally congregate and share in the agony that many of them are feeling.
Is there a sense of anxiety in the community that if they are safe, or that perhaps something like this might happen again?
Well, I've talked to several people, and I think a lot of them are still searching for answers, but not the answers that you might think. You know, the police investigation is still underway, and they're really trying to get to the bottom of what inspired this act, which President Obama calls an act of terrorism. But for many of them, those aren't the kind of answers that are going to help heal this community, they tell me. What they want to basically understand is how to prevent it in the future. And so I think a lot of them aren't really focusing on all of the what-ifs, or whys. You know, why did this happen? Why did it happen here? I think what a lot of them want are the answers that a lot of people in this country seek, and that's what are the solutions to prevent this from happening again?
Well, one of the things that the president called for in his speech the other night was the fact that Americans should unite, all Americans of all faiths. Have you seen that happening?
Well, this is a community that is certainly united. I think everybody here is united in grief for those that are dealing with this trauma, but they're also united in support. Last night I was at a vigil, which included lawmakers, it included clergy, and it also included a lot of union workers and union leaders, many of them who represented the workers that died in the attack. And certainly they were all speaking with a single voice, and that voice is SB Strong, San Bernardino Strong. And you'll see a lot of people walking around this community that are wearing T-shirts that say that here.
We appreciate your insight into what is happening in San Bernardino right now as that community struggles to find its answers and come together. And the investigation continues into what happened. Cain Faribault, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me, Jim.
The price of oil is hovering around a 7-year low after members of the Organization of Petroleum Exporting Countries, or OPEC, failed to agree in Vienna on output cuts, thus keeping daily production at about 32 million barrels. While West Texas Intermediate oil edged up in Tuesday trading, it remained below $40 a barrel, while Brent crude is selling at just above $41. Vandana Hari, a Singapore-based editorial director for the Platts, a London-headquartered energy news services, spoke with VOA's Victor Beatty about OPEC's decision, saying it came as a no surprise.
I think OPEC has radically altered its strategy. We know that since November. The path that it has embarked on since its somewhat controversial decision of November 2014, to my mind, doesn't really have any U-turns, no fail-safe, face-saving way of capitulating on that. And longer term, while I can see there's a lot of pain as a result of that, the markets are taking their own time to rebalance. I think longer term, I feel this is good for the markets. Interventionist policies are never very healthy for markets. It's a bit like fuel subsidies, you know, it has a distortionary impact. What's going to happen in the coming months? Yes, there will be possibly more pain and possibly lower prices than what we have seen so far. But as the market rebalances, the right price signals go to the producers and the consumers. And in the long run, you know, that's how you have more efficiency and more robustness in the market.
Is there a glut on the world market today?
Without doubt, there is. Estimates vary. It's not always easy to count every single barrel that is sitting in tanks right now or is in transit and being produced. But estimates are anywhere between 1.5 to 2 million barrels per day is the oversupply right now compared with demand. And, of course, fears that it might get worse in 2016 as the incremental Iranian barrels come on stream as well.
Oil prices are down around, fluctuating around $40 a barrel. How much farther do you think they might go?
So I personally do not predict, but we have seen some analysts flag a $20 figure out there. It's not impossible. I don't think they will, if they have a major leg down, that they will stay there for any period of time, because I think more and more oil will start shutting in.
Vandana, is the oil glut caused by a series of factors, or is it primarily the revolution in oil fracking in the U.S.?
That's where the story started. Non-OPEC production, as it's called, which is primarily the incremental barrels from tight oil or shale formations in the U.S., was a major factor pushing the world into a glut in 2014. The other part of it was that it was largely unforeseen. So it caught world markets by surprise last year. 2015 has been a story of yet another surprise, which is where U.S. tight oil has proved much more resilient. It is a story of continuous innovation. It's not just a disruptive technology. It's a technology that continues to evolve.
Do you expect then oil prices to slowly return to levels that we saw a few years ago? And what impact is the climate change conference having on oil prices?
We are currently in an oversupply environment of anywhere between 1.5 to 2 million barrels per day, with the potential to exacerbate next year. When it comes to demand, and this is where I think a lot of nervousness is creeping in, we have seen a reasonably healthy rate of demand in 2015. Right now, based on expectations of global economic growth being a little bit better in 2016 compared with 2015, some estimates call for a better demand growth rate in 2016. Personally, I have a lot of question marks on that, and that is driving a lot of nervousness as well.
A report on U.S. commercial crude stockpiles is due out Wednesday. That could impact prices. And next week, the U.S. Central Bank, the Federal Reserve's Open Market Committee, will meet and could raise U.S. interest rates for the first time in 9 years. That could also result in softer demand for oil. You're listening to International Edition. This is VOA.
Jazz America.
This is Russ Davis, and on my program Jazz America, I carry on the tradition begun decades ago by the great Willis Conover by exploring the wonders of a century of jazz history. I'll cover it all from Dixieland to swing to bebop to modal, free jazz, fusion, world jazz, contemporary, and beyond. Plus, you'll hear the words of the artists themselves as they tell their incredible stories. Join me for Jazz America, Saturdays and Sundays at 13 hours Universal Time, online at voanews.com and the Voice of America.
The news never stops, so keep current on your mobile device with VOA News. Just go to m.voanews.com/English for instant, up-to-the-minute news and entertainment. Check m.voanews.com/English on your handheld device for news as it happens. Stay connected with a fast-changing world with m.voanews.com/English.
Well, if you happen to be a fan of the group ZZ Top, then you're very familiar with its cast members, who all tend to have very long beards. Guitarist and singer Billy Gibbons is best known for his work with the band, but now Gibbons has released his first solo album. International Edition's David Byrd has this look at the CD, which has an Afro-Cuban flavor that reaches all the way back to Gibbons' childhood.
There's no mistaking Billy Gibbons' guitar work. The Rock and Roll Hall of Famer's fronting of ZZ Top has earned the Texas Trio multiple gold and platinum albums in more than 40 years together. But now Gibbons has released his first solo album, Perfecto Mundo, which is marked by Afro-Cuban rhythms and a new band called the BFGs. Gibbons says that the process began with a phone call inviting him to perform without bandmates Dusty Hill and Frank Beard at the Havana Jazz Festival.
It seemed interesting until we put that word jazz in the figure, and I said, well, I don't know jazz. I know I can play some blues, I can play some rock. That other thing is, well, outside. However, who would want to pass up an opportunity to go to Cuba? Very few.
Gibbons called his friend and band leader Chino Ponce, who is from Havana. Ponce liked what he heard, and Perfecto Mundo began to take shape. Turns out Latin music is something that Billy Gibbons is familiar with after his father, himself a band leader, sent Billy to study with legendary Puerto Rican percussionist Tito Puente in 1962.
I was 13. I just turned 13 and showed up, did not have a care in the world, and fortunately, Tito Puente is one of these gifted individuals that during his lifetime he shared a genuine passion that made everything uplifted. And when he heard me hitting this and hitting that, he said, okay, you got it. He said, now we're going to place it. And that was the magic.
Gibbons has assembled a band that includes multiple percussionists, an organist, a pianist, a bassist, and, of course, Billy on guitar. Gibbons says the recording process felt more like a jam session.
Basically a private club with no time clock running and no real thought of this, let's make a record. We were just making experiments in music that just happened to have an Afro-Cuban twist.
I want to tell you a story.
Billy Gibbons and the BFGs have released the first single off the new album, a cover of Roy Head's 1965 hit, Treat Her Right. They plan to tour in support of the album, including stops in Havana, Cuba, until February. I'm David Byrd in Washington.
You've been listening to International Edition. For more, just stop by our website at voanews.com. All the latest news, features, and even our programs are right there on the website. You can also follow us on Twitter at @VOA_IE is the handle to follow. We hope you do. Our director is Tracy Carter, our engineer Aydin Utku. I'm Jim Stevenson. We're in Washington. We thank you so much for being with us today and hope you can come back again tomorrow. Have a great day.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Gender-based violence is violence directed against women because they are women, or violence that affects primarily women and girls. They are human rights violations committed against women that stem from discrimination and gender inequality, and the failure of governments and societies to recognize the human rights of women and girls. Globally, over one-third of women and girls experience some form of physical or sexual violence in their lifetime. Violence against women takes many forms and goes far beyond rape and physical intimidation. Every girl who was married off too young, every wife who was beaten by her husband or in-laws, every woman or girl who was trafficked into sexual exploitation is a victim of gender-based violence. Girls and women who are subjected to sexual violence in war zones, honor killing, psychological abuse, such as harassment and intimidation, are victims of gender-based violence. All forms of gender-based violence are unacceptable violations of human rights, but together they form an enormous obstacle to gender equality, economic development, security, and true human progress. The 2 weeks between November 25th, the International Day for the Elimination of Violence Against Women, and December 10th, Human Rights Day, are dedicated to 16 days of activism against gender-based violence. 16 days of campaigning around the world to challenge and raise awareness of gender-based violence and mobilizing people everywhere to bring about change. This year's theme is From Peace in the Home to Peace in the World, Make Education Safe for All. The root causes of violence against women and girls include gender stereotypes, perceived gender roles, and social norms. These perceptions are formed early in childhood. Only through education can we hope to change them. This means that girls and women must be able to obtain an education so they and their children can lead better lives. It means creating a safe, hygienic school environment for them and removing obstacles that cut their education short, such as domestic work or early marriage. And it means that boys and men must be taught to engage in preventing violence against women and promoting gender equality. Gender-based violence is not inevitable. It is a choice. It can and must be prevented, and the time is now.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.